The Guardian.
World Cup Football Daily with James Richardson.
Stop flossing, ma'am. He's not coming. Yes, Italy lose, England go out, and Costa Rica rock a la Group de la Muerte. Elsewhere, letters, toast, windows, and now football teams again. Things the French are good at. It's all in this Guardian World Cup Football Daily. And after Friday, a busy one in the copper, Saturday looks no less action-packed. With Argentina, Ghana, Germany, Iran, Nigeria, and Bosnia-Herzegovina all in action, hopefully all on one big pitch. Anchorman style. We look forward to the action and to your company, listener, in this Guardian World Cup Football Daily.
Look at the size of that singer's massive nose.
Hey, they're playing our tune. Oh, dearie me.
It's huge.
Magic nights, though. Magic nights. Here in World Cup land. Magic nights. Magic nights with James Horncastle. And yes, Barry Glendinning. Barry, you got your voice, your breath back nicely from that opening. Go.
Yeah.
So well done for that. Lots of things to discuss. I say, lots of things to discuss today. There really are, actually.
And I believe you've discussed many of them before I even got here.
Why did you say that?
You've had a conversation with Philippe Auclair without my...
Oh, yeah, we did, darling. Well, yeah, that's the thing, because, Philippe, though he is very much the bon viveur, he also likes to maintain normal operating hours, and therefore we dialed him up before the stroke of the midnight.
That's all right.
Do you want to? Thing is, he was hot off that 5-2 victory for his Les Bleus over the Swiss. And if you'd like to hear what he had to say, here we go. We dial up a happy Frenchman, and we got this. Philippe.
Oui.
Bonsoir.
Bonsoir, Jimbo.
Ah, I thought you were calling me Ham for a second. But nice to speak to you, Philippe. And it must feel pretty special to be French right now.
It's not a bad feeling. It's a little bit unreal, though. Hmm? I mean, I really wasn't expecting this, I must say.
Really?
Well, we're playing against a team that's conceded 2 goals in 8 games, in 8 World Cup games. I think the last 3 we played against the Swiss, there were 3 draws, and they were all in the World Cup or World Cup qualifiers. Didier Deschamps threw a bit of a spanner in the works when he announced the team, and we thought, oh gosh, what is he doing? This is not Deschamps-like at all. That's not the Deschamps of Marseille. This is not the Deschamps of Monaco or even of the French team, changing the team like that. Is he a bit underestimating the Swiss, Giroud, Benzema, but protecting Pogba because he was one yellow card away from suspension. Yeah, okay, we'll see how it goes. And we saw how it went, and it was absolutely thrilling, I must say. Absolutely thrilling. I don't know how much of this is due to the fact, I'll have to watch the game again because I'd like to know how much of this was due to the fact the Swiss completely went to pieces and how much was due to the sheer brilliance of some of the French play. And some of the touches were absolutely... it was extraordinary. These players were on a cloud.
Yeah. What was your favourite bit, Philippe, then?
The disallowed goal wasn't bad. That wasn't bad.
Quite eclectic. pass?
Pogba's pass was just magnificent, and also Benzema's reaction to it, because the ball is slightly deflected, very very difficult to keep your balance, and is anticipating it, and is able to change ever so slightly his body shape to volley it. But also I think Giroud's square pass for Valbuena, always happy when Valbuena scores. He's an absolutely crucial player in that side. I don't think that people realize how important he is in Deschamps' team. In fact, he's probably the first name on the team sheet, I would imagine. I think he's played every single game under Didier Deschamps now. Valby. Le Petit Vélo, as we call him, the little bicycle.
Ah,
and I love that, you know, when he jumped on Giroud's shoulders, it was amazing to see how small he was.
He genuinely is tiny.
This is like when Verratti jumps on Ibra's shoulders.
Right. Yes, something like that, yes.
Yeah. Felipe, it won't have escaped your attention that it was 4 years to the day since...
Yes, since the famous incident of the bus of shame. Mm. Yes, 4 years to the day. But I can tell you I wouldn't say we've forgotten about it, but not many people are mentioning it in France. I think people... the only thing that worries me is that people are getting a little bit ahead of themselves on the basis of two games and all these things. You know, the fact as well it was the 100th goal in World Cup history for France, scored by Olivier Giroud, all these sort of things. And we think, all these good omens, it's looking so good. Mm. I'm a little bit worried about Mamadou Sakho as well. I hope it's not too bad. The first signs, it's a thigh strain. I sincerely hope he's going to be... fit again very soon. He's a really important member of that squad. And the last two goals were, you know, by the Swiss were a little bit disappointing. But I'm really trying to find a fly in the ointment when there is not even a gnat in the ointment.
Right, well, not so far anyway. Next up, of course, is the mighty Ecuador. We'll see how that one goes. But you're qualified now.
Nearly. I think there's a...
Is there still a mathematical chance you won?
A very slight... extraordinarily slight. I think there is a... it's not absolutely definite yet,
okay.
is what I understand. But, you know, if you're not qualified, 6 points with having scored, what is it now, 9 goals? My gosh. Mm. And conceded 2. I mean, it's actually amazing when you think the last 7 games France has played have produced 26 goals.
Wow.
For France, that is.
Wow.
And
but there was an Australia game in there, wasn't there?
That's correct. Does it count? Yes, it does count when you see the way they played against the Netherlands. And but maybe it's the Salvador de Bahia effect, because all the games which have happened in that stadium so far have been crackers in terms of goal fests.
Yeah, team's had a lot of fun in each of the games there. But Philippe, then, okay, so going forward, apart from overconfidence and overexuberance, is there anything that concerns you, any flaw that's not yet been exposed about this team?
I think the group is not the strongest. Switzerland's FIFA ranking is slightly...
anomalous?
Yes, we could use that word. And it's due to the fact that they were absolutely splendid in the qualifiers and that they've been very resilient. And they were in a qualifying group for the World Cup, which was also not the strongest. But I would say the same interrogations. I do hope Karim Benzema can keep on this remarkable... form, 3 goals and 2 assists now in 2 games. I think 8 goals in 7, which is more than welcome.
What's changed with him, Philippe? Because obviously in October he was still on that huge drought of 1,220 minutes.
Something like that, 22, yes.
How what's Deschamps done differently with him, or how's he managed him psychologically, do you think?
I think he's I don't think there is any secret to it. I think it was just a matter of breaking the duck. I mean, I know it sounds very simplistic to say that, but there was no reason why at some point, you know, he wouldn't score and score and score again and replicate his club form with the French national team. It had become a little bit of an obsession in France, a little bit like Rooney not scoring in the World Cup. And I don't think Deschamps has done anything in particular with Benzema that he hasn't done with the other players. But what he's done with everybody, it seems, is pretty damn remarkable. It was, you know, that the big surprise before the competition started was that all the reports were that there was nothing to report from the French camp, which is very unusual for us. You know, and actually it was a bit disquieting, really. We thought, oh my God, what's happening here? And you were really struggling to find examples in recent history of French teams that you could say that of. But he seems to have been able to, simply to make people live with each other quite well and to find the right balance. And obviously he has... When Deschamps speaks to you, you listen. I know that sounds silly to say that, but do you remember that extraordinary documentary, Les Yeux dans les Bleus?
Yeah, fantastic.
Do you remember that scene when Deschamps, at the halftime of the final, is talking to his teammates? And I think it is Zinedine Zidane at one point, he talks to him. And the intensity and of the man's eyes and the sincerity of what he says and you cannot but be completely taken by it. And at the time, he was just a player. He was, you know, he was, of course, the manager in second. He was Jacquet's manager on the pitch. But he obviously has got this astonishing capacity to connect with fellow players and now as a manager as well with the guys that he has under his orders. So that you know, honestly, is all very good and bodes well for the future. I'm just thinking that we thought today would be a real test, and it wasn't. And one of the reasons why it wasn't, also, you have to think back, is that the first two goals were scored in the blink of an eye. Mm. And then Switzerland completely crumbled after that. France will have tougher opponents in the days and perhaps even weeks to come. But it's not necessarily a bad draw they've got. I mean, they should finish top of their group if they don't completely cock it up in their last game. Mm. And then you think,
Bosnia, Iran, or Nigeria.
Yeah.
Mm.
And you think, okay, quarters, which was the objective, by the way, at the beginning, the quarters look like a real possibility. And afterwards, you know, they're genuinely one of the informed teams, and some of the rhythm of their play was absolutely magnificent. There's so much athleticism and dynamism in that midfield in particular. I think you'll have been struck as well by how good Blaise Matuidi, I think we say that every time we talk about Blaise Matuidi, absolutely terrific in terms of this potential just to explode forward. And this is in a team where perhaps the best midfielder was not playing, i.e. Pogba, and only came on late on in the game. So there's there are still some interrogations, perhaps, on the sides. Defensively, I still have my doubts about Evrard Debuchy as being able to hold the fort in a game which is tighter, when there's a little bit more domination against a team that has more possession, against a team that is a bit more forthright in its attacking intent than Switzerland has been. But honestly, I'm really nitpicking here.
Mm. All right, well, let's not pick any nits further then.
No, we shouldn't do.
Let's enjoy this moment. Let's savour it. And yeah, you enjoy your evening. Many, many thanks for that extremely full and frank explanation of the state of play with France, Philippe.
Well, thank you very much.
No, it is I that says merci.
Mon plaisir.
Oui. Okay. Bye. À bientôt.
À bientôt.
Nice evening.
Welcome Football Daily with James Richardson.
Well, Philippe's contention there that France haven't been tested properly yet, and I guess you could make that case, especially once Senderos had become part of the Swiss setup.
Yeah, Senderos and Giroud. Mm. We haven't seen that fail before. It was a disappointment from the Swiss. Yeah, I mean, many people poo-poo these FIFA rankings, but I think
it's one of my favourite verbs, though.
Really? Mm. I think they earned their sixth place. Yeah, they're the seeded team in that group. But it was a bit strange that Hitzfeld didn't play Basel's sort of highly regarded centre-back Fabian Schär, rather than, you know, just, you know, play Sendosh and Giroud after Von Bergen went off. So, yeah, you could perhaps see the holes emerging in that Emmental.
Oh. Lee Mellin says, Tiki Taxidermy as France stuff Switzerland. That's an interesting addition to our catalogue, which has got lengthy, because yesterday we were playfully inviting listeners to contribute an entire 32 World Cup guide.
There's a great website called Crap Taxidermy.
Oh.
It's just very, very bad.
It's not
taxidermy.
Literally. No. Oh, I see. Very, very bad. All right, do you want the ticky-tacky list now, Barry, or should we save that for later?
He's waiting for a ticky-taxi, so...
Well, ticky-taxi's in there.
No, go for it.
Go
I
for
don't
it.
Mind.
All right, well, yeah, Lee Mellon's just kicked it off with a bit of ticky-taxidermy. A ticky-taxi for Spain, that was, of course, one that... could you, says Joe Guar, describe Costa Rica's performance so far as ticky-ticos? Because that's what their nickname is. Tico Taco is Everard Santa Marino, who's a similar theme. Spain Tiki Taco, Mexico Tiki Taco, James, you heard that the other day. India Tiki Tikka Masala. Similarly, Scotland Tiki Tea Cakes. Kevin Coughlin's got Japan Tiki Tokyo, but I think we've been over that. Honduras Ecuador Kiki Taco. Right, well, there you go. Did you enjoy Honduras Ecuador?
I did, up to a point. I was doing the minute-by-minute report, which was quite difficult because they're two teams who, I don't mind admitting, I'm not hugely familiar with their players. Like, so if you're doing the minute-by-minute, I spent a lot of time trying to put names to faces. And there was so many pauses when the referee blew his whistle for the many, many, many fouls that were committed throughout the game. But for all that, it was a very entertaining game, and it was like watching Stoke under Tony Pulis play Stoke under Tony Pulis.
It was better than that.
Without Wilson Palacios.
Right.
The ball spent a hell of a long time very high up in the air. Lee Dixon put it quite well when he said it's like there's a lake full of piranha fish in the middle of the field. The players are so reluctant to go in there, tiptoe in there. But yeah, it was a good old game. Very violent. But without being too cynical. There was no real downright
nastiness.
It was
cartoonish element to it. Almost.
Yeah, sort of cartoon fist fights and whatnot. But nobody got sent off. There was a few bookings. But just two really committed teams, and all 22 players and the subs who came on really gave it their all. They're both very limited teams, but they put on a good show. And Ecuador were the deserving winners.
Honduras, though, with the referee's decisions, disallowed goal and that, or goals... We're a bit sketchy on this by now. Were they unfairly treated or not?
No.
Good. There you go. Carlos Costley. And that's
I thought the ref had
name,
a good game,
this.
Actually, right,
yeah.
For an Australian.
Yeah.
Who, because, you know, they don't know anything about football.
Right.
it was. It must have been a horrible game to ref, and I thought he did a really good job. He could easily have
quite enjoyed it.
He got to blow his whistle a lot, anyway, that's for sure. And got to use his can of foam a lot.
Yeah.
But he did a good job in trying circumstances.
Robbie Savage is not a fan of Vanishing Spray, I gathered from his commentary. Barry, are you a fan of Robbie Savage? Well, we'll skip that question. Just tell him, you had a little Robbie Savage story, didn't you?
Well, not really, just on the subject of Robbie Savage and the Vanishing Spray, he said that he...
If only one could be applied to the other.
Well, funny you should say that, because he made the observation during the game, Italy-Costa Rica game, that he needed a can of it because he'd spilt red wine on his beige trousers the previous evening. I don't think he quite understands the concept, because he would just spray that on his trousers, it would disappear.
There, Barry. Don't think he quite. Yeah,
and the stain would still be on his trousers.
Well, indeed. Anyway,
you mentioned great names.
Oh yeah,
Carlos Costley?
What's his first name? Yeah, Carlo Costley.
Yeah,
who put an end to 510 minutes without a goal for Honduras.
There's a guy in Honduras' team who's I think his second name is Boniek.
Boniek. Yeah, I think he's. I assume he's named after Zibi.
After Zibi, which is pretty.
That's quite cool.
Yeah,
that's a very credible name.
There was another great name somewhere today.
All right. Well, while he's thinking of that, listeners, let me just say that a bit of housekeeping. So it was 2-1 for Ecuador over Honduras, which means that Honduras very much bottom of the group, but they're not mathematically out of contention yet. At the other end of the table, France riding high after that 5-2 defeat. Of the Swiss. And, we haven't talked about it yet. Let's do it. Let's do Italy-Costa Rica. Huh. 7 Costa Rican players called to the anti-doping afterwards. Apparently this was because, and a lot of eyebrows raised about this, because what's happening there then, eh? Because usually it's only 2. FIFA explained that 5 players have to give pre-World Cup tournaments samples, and they hadn't, so they did the 2 for the game and the 5 for the pre-war. I don't know why they worked it that way, but anyway, Costa Rica, what a magnificent
Have they actually managed to give their samples yet? Because, I mean, they ran so hard for the game that I would imagine it would have taken them a while to muster the necessary water to pass.
Well, indeed. It might well have done. There's many things to say about this game. The heat, I think, is definitely one of them, and one that very conceivably affected Italy's performance after, first of all, the Manaus game against England, and this one they looked pretty baked out there. But let's tip our hats to the extraordinary Costa Rica and their boss, Jorge Luis Pinto, who's had 19 jobs in 30 years of management, as you probably all read by now, and he's been studying the Italian side for 20 years, waiting to beat them. And indeed he did. To get us a little bit of perspective on what this means to Costa Rican folk everywhere, let's hear now from Eddie Mendez of Sports World News and also Opta. Hi, Eddie.
Evening, gentlemen. How's everything going?
Well, yeah, pretty well. But how's it going for you?
Absolutely fantastic. This is something historic, especially for me. I wasn't really conscious enough in 1990 to experience that World Cup run that we had in Italy. But to be a full-grown adult for this one, it definitely It's never in my wildest dreams that I see this coming, and it's actually a ride I'm actually quite enjoying.
I can imagine. Very few people outside of Costa Rica seem to have any notion that they would be the danger team in this group of death. Pinto, is the story Pinto? Is it a group spirit? What's been the key to this?
It's definitely been Pinto. I think Jorge Luis Pinto, he was in charge of the national team before. It didn't exactly end well. He came back and he brought this tactic, this defensive mindset of his, where we're going to sit back with the back line of five and we're also going to try and possess the ball and be proactive. You saw right now we're going 180 minutes. We haven't conceded a goal from the run of play. In World Cup qualifying, we went close to 500 minutes without even conceding a goal. And then when we finally did, it was on a penalty kick. And it was a penalty kick that was actually saved by Keylor Navas. It just happened to trickle in afterwards. What Pinto's been able to do is really get every single player to buy into his system, to defend, to swarm, and to really play as one cohesive unit. And his vision is really coming to fruition, because a lot of people would have assumed Costa Rica would just sit back and we counter, we'd be the minnows of Group D. Myself included, I actually thought that we would do that. I didn't think we were going to get 6 points from the first two games. But he wanted to be proactive. He wanted possession of the ball, and he wanted to defend. And it's been an absolute masterclass from him.
It's been amazing.
Eddie, Costa Rica face the group minnows in their next game, and presuming you beat them, you will play one of probably Ivory Coast, Japan, or Greece. You'd have to be confident about getting past them as well, wouldn't you?
I actually am, and I'm actually surprised to be saying this. If I had to pick which one I would personally rather see, I think the easy answer would be Greece, just because of they're so negative in the defending, and that's really what they're known for. And the individual talents of Ivory Coast can really pose problems for our center back trio, because as structured and as organized as they are, they do have a little bit of issues dealing with pace being thrown at them and diagonal runs. And I think Ivory Coast would kind of expose that a little bit. But I don't want to see Japan. I know that much. I've seen us against Japan, and it wasn't pretty.
Well, what happened, Eddie, against Japan?
It was a friendly, and I know a lot of people say don't put too much into friendly results, but we ended up, before we made the substitutions and, you know, the friendly substitutions 45 minutes after that, they were really shredding us in the first about 30 to 35 minutes, and they were really exposing us on the ground, playing these through balls, making just diagonal runs behind our center back trio. And I think that they would be able to do that again to us. They match up well with us, and I think that Greece actually don't match up well, and Ivory Coast not so much either.
All right. Okay, well, you've got to win the group yet, and of course there is still England to come in that big Tuesday clash. I was reading one or two of the Costa Rican papers there, and I noticed with excitement that I think it was Diario, I might be getting that wrong, had a...
Yeah, El Diario.
El Diario, yeah, they had an exclusive report on some psychic pets, which is, you know, very much the vogue thing in punditry these days. Anyway, apparently a Guatemalan fellow has a pair of very exotic-looking budgerigars who've pecked the seed from the tin mark Costa Rica, to the extent that not only did they predict them getting out of the group, but going all the way to the final with Argentina. That's probably a big story for you there, is it?
Yeah, that would be something. I personally wouldn't go that far. I think even if we'd say we do get out of the round of 16 and we reach the quarterfinals, it would be something where we would match up maybe against a Chile or a Holland maybe. And I think there, once you start reaching that really high-end quality, maybe the five or six handful of teams that really can win this tournament, that eventually Cinderella has to go home, and that would be our time. But for us, you know, just to make it this far, to basically exceed our expectations and rewrite history, completely better performance than it was in 1990, that for us right now as a nation, that's enough. And anything right now, it would be bonus. Right now, we're playing with house money.
All right, excellent. Eddie, that's fantastic. Well, I do hope we can catch up with you again further down the line.
Oh, definitely. Thank you. It was great to be on, and wish you guys the best.
Well, thank you very much. Congratulations for your extraordinary run. Right. Well, there you go. The best they've ever done. They were last 16, I think, in Italia 90.
Yeah, I think they got knocked out by the Czechs.
Is that what happened? There you go. Anyway, they beat Italy 1-0 with the fearsome Brian Rees doing the business there. It should have been 2, of course, because they so should have had a penalty just before they scored.
Yeah, Giorgio Chiellini cut across Joel Campbell. It was a stonewall penalty, in my opinion, even though he did go down. And yeah, you'd like to see him kind of commit to taking a shot rather than think about going down before that. But I was really impressed with them. Yeah, a lot of people were saying their result against Uruguay was a bit of a fluke. Uruguay made a number of mistakes. They had Diego Lugano at the back and they were missing Luis Suarez. But yeah, I mean, they seem a little bit like Chile to have a very clear sense of what they have to do, a very clear identity. And I think they're a great sort of collective. They pressed Italy so high up the pitch that Italy couldn't play out and play their tiki-taka, if we go back to this tiki-mem. And yeah, Italy had one way of exposing them, which was to play balls over the top quickly to Balotelli. And when that did succeed, Balotelli's touch was heavy and his shots were wayward. Mm. Or Costa Rica caught them offside 11 times.
Yeah,
that's a record, isn't it, the World Cup?
A World Cup record, which, staggering.
A contributing factor, I would think, from an Italian point of view, was Prandelli messing about with the formation. Things had worked so perfectly against England, and classic stuff this from Italy. Into the second game they go, and of course they mess around with the formation, and it all rather stops dead. It's the fourth World Cup in a row?
I think third.
Third World Cup in a row that they failed to win their second group game. But certainly, Prandelli's decisions didn't prove the wise, either before the game or indeed during it, with the introduction of Antonio Cassano, who had, I think, the worst game I think I've ever seen him, or half a game I've ever seen him play. He lost possession more than any other Italy player 16 times, and this despite only playing half the match, which is remarkable.
Yeah, I mean, Prandelli said that he expected more from the players that he threw on, both Cassano, Insigne and Cerci, and they didn't make an impact. In fact, yeah, you could say Italy's performance deteriorated even when they came on. But yeah, I thought his initial selection, he did make changes from the England game. He brought back Gigi Buffon,
right,
who, to be honest, looked a little bit rusty.
Oh, yeah.
And because of other injuries or players who didn't perform well against England, he changed his defence around and he broke up what was probably one of Italy's great strengths, which was the right-hand side of Darmian and Candreva. He moved Darmian onto the other side and brought in Abate, and Abate was terrible.
Yeah, and he put on Thiago Motta.
Yeah, he's a better player than a lot of people give him credit for.
Thiago Motta?
Yes, but on today's show, I mean, he did slow everything down. He wasn't dynamic enough, you know, and yeah, it's a shame, really. But I think they have to find, not another way of playing, but they could have approached that game perhaps differently.
Well, they've got this game against Uruguay now. Italy go through with a draw.
Yeah, they drew against Uruguay at the Confederations Cup this time last summer, 2-2. Yeah, that was the third place playoff. They won on penalties. Obviously, there won't be penalties this time, but yes, a draw will be enough because they've got superior goal difference.
For England, though, it's all over.
It's over.
It's all over.
I thought it was interesting, actually, to contrast Costa Rica, where everything England weren't, sort of stout in defence, energetic going forward, and passed the ball well, three things which England never do. And if you look at their players, like they've players from Levante, Columbus Crew, Bruges, Mans, Rosenborg, Red Bulls, AIK, Athens, Copenhagen.
Oh, that's it. The PSV. Other good name, they have a guy called Yeltsin in their team.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, played on the right-hand side.
Olympiacos. And the rest are all from teams in Costa Rica that I've never really heard of before.
Right.
So, which sort of goes to show you don't need big-name superstars to create a good team.
How about that? England, on the other hand, as Jeremy Wilson of The Telegraph is pointing out, from kickoff to elimination, their World Cup lasted 5 days, 19 hours and 49 minutes.
Well, you have to.
You know,
laugh.
It would be funny if it wasn't.
It is funny, though. Oh, you have to.
Arthur Nudge With 2 points, you only miss it when it's gone. England's defence was world-class for years, says Arthur. And point two, Sven looks better every year that passes. Yeah, do you reckon?
What, in appearance, as in, oh, Sven?
Yeah. I think what Arthur was hinting at was that actually...
A lot of ladies seem to think he looks better every year that passes.
He had an easygoing charm, didn't he? Anyway, hey, here's Jamie 12 who's posting in on that whole Pirlo thing we were talking about yesterday about how he's developed as a player. He was saying it's interesting because he was akin to Xavi in that he unassumingly conducted the rhythm of the Italian play, but whereas Xavi's legs kind of went, something very different happened to Pirlo, and that different thing, according to Jamie 12, is that he's just started to take the piss all the time now. Excuse my language. But he's constantly doing it, he says. Whereas he was previously guileful and would choose the studied and sensible option, now he tends to pick the most ludicrous. Every little touch is a little joke done, almost with a giggle. I think that's rather nice, actually. He plays like he's having a lot of tremendous sex, says James Brown. Yeah. Good.
Well, he's single. Well,
is he?
He's divorced his wife.
Oh, yeah.
Recently. So, you know. I mean, he's a very handsome guy. He's got the beard. He's got the hair.
There's something about him, that's for sure.
We spoke about his profile growing since Euro 2012. Mm. I think he's also become kind of a style icon since then, no?
Mm.
Look at his get-up, his red trousers.
He's got it, hasn't he? Paul McCann says, has the pod considered that well into this World Cup, of course we haven't, there hasn't been a goal from a direct free kick, in brackets, I think.
There has.
Well, you're wrong, Paul McCann.
It was today.
Oh, was it
Switzerland,
today?
Switzerland.
What a terrible time to read that. That post out. Let's move on then to Saturday's action.
Oh, before we do, we didn't really mention Ecuador and their goal scorer. Was it Ener Valencia?
Oh, yeah.
Who scored he's now, joint top scorer with Karim Benzema.
Is he?
And he's probably one of the finds of the tournament.
Scored against England as well, didn't he?
He did. He scored in 7 of his last 6 games for Ecuador. And considering they went into this tournament under the shadow of Chucho Benitez's death, their former talismanic striker who died last, I think, August of cardiac arrest, tragically young, and how replacing him was supposedly going to be, impossible. Mm. And it is in some respects. Well, yeah.
They reached into their Ener Valencia and...
they did. Yeah. And I think, I mean, he plays in the Mexican League, which is a very wealthy league, and I'm sure he'll be paid quite well, but I'm sure there'll be a number of clubs really quite interested in him on the back of this tournament.
Mm.
Although you shouldn't necessarily buy a player just because they have a good World Cup.
Well, that's for very sound advice. Thanks, James.
On what industry is this wealthy Mexican League built on? Could you possibly hazard a guess?
I don't know. Telecom?
Just wondering.
It might be.
Well,
Saturday, anyway, as I was mentioning, 3 games for us to enjoy. Barry, there's Nigeria-Bosnia.
I'm all over it.
Germany-Ghana and the clash of cultures that is Argentina-Iran, which kicks the day off.
Yeah. Gonzalo Higuain has been injured out for Argentina.
Oh, is he?
That's what I know about that one.
Ah.
Oh, and they played once before in 1977 in Madrid.
Did they?
It was a 1-1 draw.
I'm
not sure what you can read into that as far as tomorrow's game is concerned.
Well, I was going to throw at you that it's 16 years, I believe, pretty much to the day since their one World Cup win, which is against...
the USA.
Big Satan's USA. Mm. And, obviously, if they were to top Argentina, that would be probably an even bigger one.
They won't, though, will they?
Well, they might. I mean, I don't know. Might they?
I don't think so.
Right. Argentina, they hardly sparkled against Bosnia-Herzegovina.
Well, they started very weirdly with having ditched their formation and played, 3 defenders, and it just didn't work. But the manager changed things around at halftime.
Messi changed it.
Well, yeah, that's what I said. The manager changed things at halftime. And... yeah, they were a lot better in the second half.
All right. Well, anyway, Bosnia got beaten in that game, you will recall, which means that as they head into their Nigeria game, they are staring down the barrel of an early exit, which, given that they were everyone's go-to dark horses in that, is a bit of a shock, isn't it?
Bosnia? I still think they're a better team than Nigeria.
Well, yeah, but if they were, if it was...
Well, I thought they acquitted themselves well against Argentina, but, I mean... Yeah, Argentina won that game by virtue of an own goal and a superb strike, piece of individual brilliance from Lionel Messi. Apart from that, You know, I thought Bosnia sometimes threatened. I thought players like Pjanic, for example, was excellent both on and off the ball. I believe they'll have enough about them to beat Nigeria, who were really disappointing against Iran. They just couldn't really string many passes together. Everything was sideways. But, you know.
Stephen Keshi under pressure, they say. Ibizovic is supposedly coming back into... to support
Djoko?
Up front, Djoko, and with, you know, Pjanic and stuff up front. Well, that all sounds great then. So you're heavily tipping Bosnia Herzegovina,
yeah,
to remain very much in contention in that group, with Argentina, of course, currently leading. And well, the other game, which is from the, well, this would be Group G by now, wouldn't it be? Germany, who got off to a terrific start, thrashing Portugal 4-0. And next up, they will try their luck with Ghana, who were beaten by USA, USA, USA.
And this one pits the Boateng boys together.
Exactly.
And Kevin Prince Boateng, who plays for Ghana, made some very disparaging remarks about the German side when the draw for this group was made. And Yogi Löw suggested that... he might be in for a kick in tomorrow if selected.
Right.
Well, just to, you know, we will exact retribution at the appropriate time, sort of thing. Was the general vibe. So yeah, if Kevin Prince-Boateng, he wasn't picked for the first game.
No, but he made a big difference when he came on.
And there's been a lot of calls for him to be included in the starting 11, I think, as well, with Michael Essien, who didn't start against the USA. So. Perhaps those will be changes that Appia makes. But for Germany, I think they're going to be more or less the same as they were against Portugal, providing Mats Hummels passes of late fitness test, I think, and recovers.
Thomas Müller was the danger man against Portugal. How's he looking, Barry?
He was the danger man at training today when he hit some people who were sitting, sort of having their lunch or something, and sent a ball accidentally.
Was it over a fence, or were they just picnicking near the training?
I can't remember, actually. This is even more boring than your budgerigar anecdote, so I'm just going to abandon it.
All right, okay. I think that's more than enough on Germany-Ghana, isn't it? Big game, though, for the Black Stars, of course, after that defeat to the Americans. They hit a World Cup joint high against USA with 21 shots. Only 3 of them were on target. That is interesting.
Lazy football.
Yeah, absolutely.
More on target.
I bet they didn't sing their anthem properly. That's where it all started to go wrong for them. Now, I'm just shuffling up my bits of paper because that Saturday, boom, previewed for you. We'll be back to review it on Saturday night. How about that? So if you've got little else to do on a Sunday, do drop by and see what we made of it all. In the meantime, many thanks to Barry Glendinning.
Thanks.
To James Horncastle and guest producer Pete. And you, listener, we'll be back, as I say, late Saturday. See you then.